This is The State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow.
I'm Ruth Carol Nix Parker Ferguson.
My name is Hargis Eisen.
My name is Leonora Green. My age is 86 lovely years, well used up.
Those are just a few of the voices among the tens of thousands that have been recorded by StoryCorps. It's a national oral history project that collects conversations across the country and archives them at the Library of Congress. People come to StoryCorps and spend 40 uninterrupted minutes with their loved ones and ask them life's biggest questions. One part of the project is a mobile Airstream trailer that travels the country recording stories. This trailer just spent 6 weeks here in the Triangle, right outside our studios here in Durham, in fact. And today we'll hear some of those recorded conversations. But first, we'll meet the brains behind the whole endeavor, David Isay. Dave founded StoryCorps in 2003 and is now the project's president. Dave, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Hi, Frank. Good to talk to you again.
Tell us how the idea for StoryCorps came about.
Well, I had been making radio documentaries for many years for NPR, and a lot of these documentaries involve people whose voices hadn't kind of normally made it to air. So I was spending a lot of time in prisons and homeless shelters and that sort of stuff. And I came to believe at some point that the act of actually just being interviewed and being listened to could be a very important moment in people's lives, and kind of had this crazy idea almost to turn radio documentary on its head and say that the purpose isn't what we broadcast, but giving people the chance to be heard. It's the interviews themselves. So I wanted to start this kind of almost social public service project where, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, and someday hopefully hundreds of thousands of people have the chance to be listened to in this way. And in doing so, you know, recognize how much their lives matter. You know, I think it's a very, very simple idea. It's two people, as you know, in a booth with the help of a trained facilitator having these conversations.
Well, you know, I think to give folks a sense of the evolution of this thought that you had, that there would be a public service in allowing people their own voice, certainly Ghetto Life 101 is a project that I remember and have a deep appreciation for. We have a clip, and I think it gives folks a flavor of just the kind of thing you were aiming for.
Good morning, day one. Walking to school. Leaving out your door. This is my dog, Ferocious. You know why he got that name if you hear him bark. I see the ghetto every day, walking to school. Guy standing on the corner, burning the fire. I live here. This is home. What's up, Henry? What's up, Doodoo? This is my walk every day. It's going to take me on a new journey through my life.
Here's a little clip from a project called Ghetto Life 101, produced by my guest David Isay, and in many ways it became the foundation for a later project of David's, something you're very familiar with, called StoryCorps. Tell us a little bit more about Ghetto Life 101 and its relationship to StoryCorps.
Sure. I haven't heard that opening clip in a long time. It's great to hear. That was a long time ago. It was two kids growing up in Chicago who I gave a microphone to and tape recorder for 1 week to record their lives. And it was kind of that expression, the aha moment in creating StoryCorps, because these kids took these tape recorders. It was the first kind of do-it-yourself radio documentary on NPR. And I saw that the microphone gave them the license to have conversations that they'd never had before. The kid whose voice you just heard, Lee Allen, was 13 at the time, and now he's 35. And I saw that as everybody in this documentary died except these two now men, you know, these tapes became very important to them because it was the only record they had of loved ones' voices. You know, I also did a documentary in the flop houses here on the Bowery, New York, where homeless guys lived in these kind of prison cell-sized cubicles. And I ended up doing a book of oral histories and photos of these guys. And I remember going up with the galleys, you know, the pre-publication copy of a book, and showing it to one of the guys living in the flop house. And he looked at his oral history and his photograph, and then he grabbed the book out of my hand. And he turned around and he started running down this narrow hallway, holding the book over his head, shouting, "I exist, I exist," you know, and that kind of became a clarion call for StoryCorps, and very much what StoryCorps is about.
What encouraged you then to find ways to permanently archive these conversations?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, there were two partnerships that I knew would be important in order to start StoryCorps. One was an archive partnership, and We worked with American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress and continue to work, and they were brave enough when I called up out of the blue and had never talked to the person who ran it at the time, and I said, I want to create this oral history of America and give everybody the chance to record their stories. Will you accept it? And she said yes. The other was with NPR, so that we could have a broadcast partnership for the excerpts of these stories and get them out there. You know, we find when we do surveys with folks who participated that the number one reason why people participate in StoryCorps, not by a huge margin, but it is the number one reason, is because their story is going to be at the Library of Congress. And I think that the imprimatur of the Library of Congress and people knowing that their story is important enough to go to the Library of Congress and be part of American history is a very important part of this project. And also, you know, the archival part. When I was a kid, I had made some recordings with my grandparents, which I lost when I was 12 or 13 years old, and still wish I had this record of the voices of these people who meant so much to me, huge characters, and I don't, and I want to make sure that no one else made that dumb mistake that I did. So when you come to StoryCorps and record in the booth, you know that it will be safe for your great-great-great-great-great-grandkids to get to know you and whoever it is that you interviewed through their voice and story.
And, you know, you highlight two very important elements in this. One, I'm important enough, my story is important enough for you to listen to, the exchange between us, that counts for something, and that you're going to save it. I mean, that's a whole second level. But I want to ask you about the question of voice. You know, you talked about a book, photographs. Obviously, there have been video documentaries done about people's lives. Is there anything special or unique about the human voice, about an oral history, in the way that it comes across and the effect that it has?
I think so. I mean, you've been around for quite a while. I've been around for quite a while in radio. And, you know, the reason we stick with it is because it's an incredibly, I think, powerful medium. I mean, there's both the recording side of it and the broadcast side of it. I mean, there's a magic to this booth where, you know, the lights are low and it's two microphones and it's incredibly intimate when you have these conversations. And I think a camera would just take away from that or certainly not add anything to it. And, you know, to me, the soul is kind of contained in the human voice. And I also think from a broadcast standpoint, you know, we excerpt, well, it's not the main purpose of StoryCorps. We do excerpt these stories for people to hear and hopefully when they're listening to it, recognize maybe a little bit of themselves and someone who they might have thought was very different. And, you know, when you're listening to these stories, radio is, you know, many people listen when they're in the car and it's almost like this person in the passenger seat, you know, whispering in your ear, you know, and there's just an intimacy to radio, which I think is unparalleled.
Well, the project certainly has taken off, and over the years, you've branched out to work with certain segments of the population, particular segments. Can you talk about the special initiatives that you've had and what inspired them?
We have done, I think, 9 or 10 special initiatives since we launched, and these are kind of major national projects where we'll focus on one particular group of folks and voices and spend a year or 2 years or 3 years recording those stories. So the first one was with families who lost a loved one on September 11th. We launched just a couple of years after that. And last week, you know, the museum opened up in New York City, and we've been partnering with them for the last 9 years, recording these stories. Everyone who wants to remember someone who died on that day comes to StoryCorps to leave a record of their lives by remembering their story. We have an African-American initiative, Latino initiative, various kind of health-related initiatives, an Alzheimer's initiative, one that's active now for people who are in hospice or palliative care facing very serious life-threatening illnesses. We have one that's active now called the Military Voices Initiative, which is military families and vets and active duty military who come to StoryCorps to talk about their experiences in the post-9/11 wars. And it's interesting, you know, I was with Alex Kotlowitz, the great journalist, and we were talking about this experience of vets coming to the booth and how many times, and you as a, you know, journalist, well, this will be very familiar to you, but so often you'll be talking to someone and they'll tell this really remarkable story and you'll say, you know, have you ever told this before? And they'll say no, and you'll say, why not? And they'll say, you know, no one ever asked. And that's, you know, part of what we're trying to, you know, do with StoryCorps is make sure that these questions are asked and these stories are heard and people feel honored.
StoryCorps is now 10 years old. What are your expectations? How do you see this project going forward in the future, David?
Well, I mean, I like to think we're just getting started. You know, it's a little bit of a tilting at windmills kind of project, sometimes it feels like. I mean, this is really about recognizing, you know, it's very much part and parcel with what, you know, public broadcasting is about. It's, you know, recognizing that, you know, kind of a project about listening and treating people with dignity. And really, if you get right down to it and sum it up in one sentence, it's that, you know, helping everybody see that every life matters equally and infinitely. You know, you pass by, you're in an airport and you pass by CNN and it's, you know, 24 hours of Monica Lewinsky or whatever it is. So it's a little bit out of the mainstream. But what we're going to try and do is push it into the mainstream. We have a long way to go. People who listen to NPR know about us, but people who don't, largely don't. And our dream is that someday StoryCorps will be part of the, you know, fabric of this nation and touch the lives of every American family and help create a country that a little bit more respects, you know, and nurtures kind of the dignity of humanity. So big dreams, but I think we're going to get there because it's a very powerful little idea, and there's much work to be done.
We're all behind you. Keep up the good work, Dave. Good
Thanks,
to talk
Frank.
With you.
You as well. Take care.
David Isay, the founder and president of the National Oral History Project StoryCorps. Just ahead, we'll hear some StoryCorps stories from North Carolina and meet some of the project's radio producers. You'll hear that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.